time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Sleep Science Today, where we talk about all sorts of sleep issues. Today we are going to be talking about bed bugs, and we have Dr. Kenneth Haynes, who is Professor Emeritus, University of Kentucky, and he is a bed bug expert. So, Dr. Haynes, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Great, great. So, you know, bed bugs are something that sound scary, and we probably don't know a whole lot about them, and I'm hoping that by the end of this episode, we will have a good understanding of what they are and how they impact us and even how to get rid of them. So maybe, how do we, let's start off with just your own interest in bed bugs. How did you get into dealing with this topic?
Well, just around the year 2000, I was recruiting a graduate student to my research program. I had mostly been working on other insects and their behavior, biology, and ecology. Mm-hmm. And this student really had become interested in working with bed bugs because they were all of a sudden in the news, and they were a hot topic in the news at that time. Mm-hmm. So we started a research program back then, and he and a colleague of mine got really interested. And after that, students I recruited to my program were all interested in working with bed bugs. So it started a new dimension to my career. But that's how I got into it.
Wonderful! Wow. And I mean, as you're talking, I'm thinking of so many questions that I have about this. So let me think where to even start with it. Why don't we start off with what is a bed bug? And when we say the term bed bug, are we referring to a particular insect, or are there multiple things that are considered bed bugs?
Primarily, we're talking about a single species of insects. Mm-hmm. There's a close relative that is the tropical bed bug that's behavior and biology is basically the same as our common bed bug is. In the U.S., we're only really facing this one insect in terms of long-term residence in our home. There are other incidental related bugs that we can see biting on humans, such as a bat bug, which normally would feed on bats, but when the bats are disturbed in their roost up in a chimney or something, they can occasionally come down into homes and feed on us as well. Their biologies of these three species that I've been talking about, bed bugs, the tropical bed bug, and bat bugs, is all basically the same. All of the bugs are, when they're full grown, they're smaller than an apple seed, but larger than a seed you find in a green pepper. Mm-hmm. Say. So they're pretty small insects as adults, and they start off maybe the size of a poppy seed, something mm-hmm. like that. I have pictures in my library where I relate the bed bugs to the size of different types of seeds as they grow.
Right.
And they grow through multiple stages. Each time they must take a blood meal in order to get to the next stage. Mm-hmm. They have five of those stages, and then they molt into the adult stage, where, of course, they reproduce, but also continue to take blood meals from their host, whether that's us or some other animal. Hmm. One of the insects that's completely dependent on blood for a meal. So wow. Their unique biology is that they stay hidden near where their hosts reside and come out when the hosts are sleeping, and mm-hmm. So they often go unnoticed for extended period of time.
Wow. So if they are relying completely on blood, then I can understand, obviously, a human bed would have the human in it, which would have blood for them. But does that mean that if I had a dog in my house and I had a dog bed, that they could also be in there for my dog?
That they can feed on dogs and cats and pretty much any warm-blooded animal. They're attracted to the heat and carbon dioxide and maybe to some extent body odors. Mm-hmm. But for an animal with fur, they have a more difficult time getting to the skin, and they need to be in contact with the skin in order to get all the stimulation they need to start feeding. So a dog is protected by its fur, a cat is protected by its fur, except for those few places on their bodies where their skin is exposed.
Wow.
So
wow.
They're all susceptible. Even chickens, bed bugs, the common bed bug can be a pest in chicken houses. So there's enough underneath the feathers of skin exposed for them to get to and feed on birds of different kinds.
Right. Wow. I never even realized that part of it. And I'm assuming, you know, throughout the history of man, bed bugs have been around, meaning that, you know, you go way back and mattresses when they were made out of hay or you know, different fibers and things throughout the ages, I guess that doesn't really impact. It's just the fact that it's a human and the bugs are going to find the human regardless of the setting.
Yes, certainly there are records of bugs back in the time of the pharaohs in terms of direct evidence that the ancient Egyptians were dealing with bed bugs to some extent. Mm-hmm. The bat bugs and other relatives, it's thought that the common bed bug was also found in caves, and they still are found in caves in some parts of the world. But perhaps our ancestors, when we dwelled in caves, encountered bed bugs. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that's made bed bugs potentially a bigger pest on humans is when we establish central heating in our homes. Mm. And in that way, the bed bugs could sustain populations year-round and didn't have a winter to deal with. So that gave them generation after generation under ideal conditions for their development.
Wow. So if a bed bug bites a human and gets their blood meal, as you were describing it, how long can they go in between meals? And if they don't get a meal, what happens to them?
Well, they are very good at surviving without food, and that makes them especially difficult to get rid of. It's very hard to outweigh a bed bug by depriving it of food. I've seen estimates of 6 months to a year without a blood meal.
Wow.
Now, at that point in time, the bed bugs are just hanging on. Their functions are very low, so they're in a condition where they'd be desperate for the next blood meal to start the cycle again.
Mm-hmm.
But they're difficult to outlast by depriving them of food. And that's one reason they could be really severe pests in hotel rooms, that even if the room is left vacant for weeks, the bed bugs are still there, hiding out around the bed, waiting for the next victim.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So when the bed bug, you know, we call it bed bug, and so my obvious assumption is they hang out in the bed. Why don't they hang out in, or maybe they do, in my chair or any other place that I might be?
They pretty much hang out any place that's near where a human would be sleeping or otherwise incapacitated. So certainly we find them in easy chairs where the resident would fall asleep or stay put on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
Around in the bed, they're hiding in the cracks and crevices and seams, so you may not see them during the day at all because they're well hidden at night.
Mm-hmm.
And often they're around behind the headboard, if there's a headboard, by the night table, usually within a few meters of where their victim, the person, would be sleeping on a regular basis.
So if their main interest is the warmth of the human body and the carbon dioxide, you said, and the fact that there's blood and those types of things, why would they be hiding in these little nooks and crannies? Why not just be in the bed? What do they get by hiding?
Well, the biggest danger to a bed bug from the bed bug's perspective is the person. And there's certainly bed bugs that are seen during the daylight are smashed, and they're dealt with most directly by the people involved. So hiding is their response to the fact that they will be killed if seen. So that's their defense, is to take their day-night cycle and make it the reverse of the human light cycle and mm-hmm. come out when they sleep. And interesting, it appears in the bat bugs that I mentioned, their bat bugs are reversed.
Oh,
because
yeah, right.
The bat bugs are active at night, and so they switch their cycles up in order to match up with the host,
right.
Or to be the inverse of the hosts.
But a bed bug or a bat bug or any of the three types that you talked about, do they sort of, like, if I had bed bugs in my bed, would they come to sort of feed on me, bite me, take some blood, and then go scurry back away? Or would they hang out on me? You know, how do they actually function?
Once they're full, when they have a full blood meal and they can double, triple their body mass when they take a blood meal, their instinct takes them back to the hiding place and as quickly as possible. So you certainly are, if you're awake at 3 in the morning when they've bitten you, you would see a bed bug engorged with blood, and but they should be on their way back to their hiding place. Otherwise, of course, they'd be discovered.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to take a commercial break, and then I'd love to come back and talk more about what we would actually see from a bed bug bite and a little bit more into that. So this is Andrew Kolsky on Sleep Science Today. We're with Dr. Kenneth Haynes, and we'll be right back after this commercial.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Dr. Kenneth Haynes about bed bugs. And just before the commercial break, we were talking about when the bed bugs come out and actually bite. So can you tell us, if I'm bitten by a bed bug, what would it look like? How would I know? What would it feel like? Would it feel like a mosquito bite? Give us some of the details about that.
Well, of course, like most blood-feeding insects, they're well adapted to avoid detection when they're actually biting. Mm-hmm. So their bites are themselves pretty subtle. If you're awake, you might be aware of a bed bug crawling on your skin immediately before they bite, a little tickling sensation as they crawl across you. But they're well adapted not to be detected by their host. After you're bit, then it follows the pattern of mosquitoes, where you would have a reaction. You might have a scratchy welt, a raised part of your skin. Very difficult to diagnose or distinguish between a bed bug bite and some other skin reaction. So difficult for a medical professional to say, oh, that's a bed bug bite versus any other skin reaction that it could be. Their bites are noticed after the fact, but there are about 30%, as I recall, of people that don't react at all to bed bug bites after the fact. And so you can have a husband and wife sharing the bed where one of them complains about being bitten and a partner not getting any bites at all, so suggesting maybe it's not bed bugs, but in fact it's one is reacting and the other is not. So
wow.
Bites themselves are difficult to use as a diagnosis. The real evidence is discovery of a bed bug. Mm-hmm. And that's where it takes a little bit of effort to find them and know what you're looking at.
Right. And I want to get more into that in a minute, but in terms of the bites and all, I have a couple more questions in terms of, is there a particular part of the body that they prefer that's more vulnerable for bed bug bites?
Well, typically we see bed bug bites sort of lining up, and the old wives' tale was that this is evidence of breakfast, lunch, and dinner from an individual bed bug taking three bites as they go along. But in fact, often those lines correspond to the edge of clothing. So the places that you would see bed bug bites are aligned along the lines of the pajamas, if they're wearing pajamas, along a t-shirt, lined up along those edges. So that preferring to bite when they're on skin rather than on cloth. Mm-hmm. So they crawl to the edge. I have one video picture of a group of hundreds of bed bugs that I had in a colony condition, where I provided them with a source of a blood meal, and they essentially lined up on the cloth, but putting their mouth parts in, through this nearby fake host that I had. And they're all lined up on the cloth like pigs at a trough, say.
Wow.
Consuming the blood. So the bites weren't going through the cloth, they were going beside it. So you typically see it along clothing lines where there's contact with the skin.
Mm-hmm.
Or they can make contact with the skin.
So then I'm...
any place on the body is fair game for a bed bug.
Right. But I would assume, based on that, if they like the exposed skin, that I'm probably going to not have as much concern about being them being in my hair or something. You know, like, would they be in my hair and all over my head, or are they going to be more on my extremities?
No, they're basically crawling from off or near the bed onto you. So the first skin they come in contact with is going to be wherever that is. Mm. Hair is not the substrate that they would typically walk through. Like the fur on a dog is a deterrent for their feeding. But as soon as they get to the skin, it could be on your scalp or your cheek or your neck or any part of your torso, they'll go ahead and feed.
Wow. So if I am bitten by a bed bug or bed bugs, you said it might itch or something like that. Are there any diseases that they carry that I need to be worried about?
Oh, there's implications of the possibility of them transmitting diseases, but there's no disease that has a specific relationship with bed bug as the vector and the human as the victim of that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
They're suspect for like a general skin bacterium like MRSA. It could be transmitted mechanically from one place to another by a bed bug. There are diseases that are vectored by other types of bugs where there is a well-defined relationship between the insect and the organism that causes like Chagas disease, transmitted by kissing bugs feeding on humans at night. But in northern parts of North America, we don't have that issue.
Mm-hmm.
So there's suspect that a bed bug might be capable of transmitting those diseases, but not really good evidence that they're actively involved in any natural transmission of those. And their biology doesn't really fit well with being a vector to humans because they're found in a home, typically with the same host or host family feeding them night or night. So it's difficult to complete a transmission cycle to someone else.
Right.
In that scenario. So it's unexpected in my mind for their ecology to make them a good vector, but potentially a casual vector of a mechanical disease or something that there's no need for an evolutionary process for them to adapt to being a good vector of disease.
I see. So, you know, just out of curiosity, as we're talking about them and the fact that they like the open skin and they feed on blood and all, I keep thinking to myself about mosquitoes, and I'm wondering, you know, if there's a mosquito near me, I'm going to hear that zzz, you know, buzzing around me. Do bed bugs make any noise?
No noise that we can detect, no. It's, I mean, if you had a very sensitive microphone and you had it on the same substrate as the bed bug, you might be able to pick up on sound, but you're talking about scientific instrumentation to detect it, not the human ear.
Right. So
and they don't fly, so there's no potential for buzzing.
Ah, okay. So basically then the real way that I am going to know that I may have bed bugs if I don't actually see them in the bed is I'm going to wake up and I'm going to find little small itchy welts on my arms and legs and things, basically?
Yes, and over time. It takes different amount of time for the reaction to develop, so it's not necessarily the next day that you see the evidence, but maybe 2 days down the road.
Oh.
I have a colleague who worked on bed bugs way back before they reemerged as major pests in the 1980s, and he was feeding them on himself to keep his colony going, and he discovered in 2000 or soon thereafter that if he got bit by a bed bug again, that he had a severe reaction to the bed bugs, including way beyond welts in terms of a skin reaction, something severe that could lead to ongoing medical problems.
Wow.
So that was from a early exposure that led to sensitivity and an overreaction of the immune system or some other part of our our defenses.
Wow. That's, you know,
that's common, though. They're not something that should be on people's mind as a concern with bed bugs.
Right, right. So then, you know, okay, we're talking about the fact that the bed bugs enjoy the bed because the host is there. They like to hide away in the seams and things of the mattresses. Is there an amount of bed bugs? In other words, do they reach sort of like, there's too many of us here, and so they, or do they just keep multiplying and multiplying and multiplying with no limits?
Oh, they may continue to multiply. I've experienced, and my colleagues have experienced, going into apartments with a single person occupying the apartment with over 10,000 bed bugs present.
Wow.
And that is a number that's severe enough to lead to anemia of that individual. Usually situations like that, there's some other associated problem with the victim in terms of recognition of their environment and the dangers in their environment. So most of us would become well aware of a problem before we have 10,000 bed bugs surrounding us.
Boy, I can't even imagine.
And at 10,000, you would see them during the day, too. That's a number that they can't all hide at that point.
Right. Wow. Well, I guess, you know, if you had a situation where you had someone with a hoarding disorder that had a lot of extraneous materials and things around them, I guess that gives a lot of places for bed bugs to hide if they also had bed bugs.
Yeah, hoarding, where there's stuff near the bed, so they're easy access to the human host, and certainly cracks and crevices. The more cracks and crevices you have, the more places there are for bed bugs to hide and to be there. Now, also as the populations build up to that extent, that there will be some bed bugs that are pushed out, and if they're neighboring apartments, you know, they might be found moving next door if there's a way for them to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of bed bugs' movement from place to place, though, involves humans moving things rather than bed bugs dispersing on their own.
Yeah, and I want to get into sort of how we get them and how we get rid of them and all that. But before we do that, one other question, which is, so what is the life cycle of a bed bug in terms of how old can they be? You said they could last for like a year without a meal, but how long do they last in their life cycle?
Well, it's extremely variable. If they're denied access to blood meal for some reason, their lifespan stretches out.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have access to blood meal all the time, they might have all their reproductive effort within months, the first months of their life. So I would say typical bed bug lifespan probably goes from months, and the extreme being a year. But they're around, and they need to take a blood meal every time they lay a dozen eggs or so, the female bed bug. So they have a cycle of about once a week where they need to take a blood meal for the next batch of eggs to develop.
I see. Okay. Well, let me do another commercial break here real quick. And when we come back, we'll talk about how we get them and how we get rid of them. So this is Andrew Kolsky on Sleep Science Today. I'm talking with Dr. Kenneth Haynes, and we'll be back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to Sleep Science Today. We're talking about bed bugs with Dr. Kenneth Haynes, Professor Emeritus, University of Kentucky. We've learned a lot about how bed bugs impact us, but what I'd love to talk about now is how do I get them in the first place?
Their introduction into places is usually caused by movement of people and their things. So you get bed bugs by traveling, and you've just traveled, I understand. So you go stay in a hotel that has an infestation that may or may not be known to the hotel operator. They you have a chance of them crawling into your stuff, and you bring back a suitcase with a single female that's made it beforehand, and then she's has an opportunity to start an infestation. If you're moving from one place to another, you package up your stuff. If you had a bed bug infestation, you're going to pack a few bed bugs to go along with the ride to the new place.
Wow.
So people and their stuff is the main thing. Getting them from an adjacent department, they can move enough on their own to travel to a next door neighbor or up a pipe chase or something like that to another apartment.
Wow. So if I am someone who stays in hotels when I travel, which all of us probably do, is there anything that I can do to look for and identify that there might be some bed bugs so that I can try to avoid that situation?
Well, what I do is I bring a little flashlight with me. I look around the edges of the mattress and the seams, which often means untucking the sheets to look at the right place. I look around the headboard, which is a common place for them to rest. If I'm with another person and the headboard is just hanging on the wall, which is less common now, but I would actually remove the headboard and look behind it, because that if you don't see them back there, you're probably not dealing with them.
Oh.
But my rule is that if I spend a good 10 minutes looking around the bed and around the headboard, around the night table, that their populations, and I don't see one, their populations are likely to be pretty low, and then my chances of taking them home are correspondingly low for that reason. So I feel like I've done due diligence and tried to prevent that. But the other thing that you could do in that situation is not put your bags down on the floor or on the bed to leave them on the bed, but really use that luggage rack so that they have to get to your stuff. They have to crawl up things. I know people who've gone to the extreme of always putting their suitcases and stuff into the bathtub in a hotel room to prevent bed bugs. Now, my view is that's kind of overreacting. If you don't see evidence of bed bugs, then I personally wouldn't go to that extent.
Right.
But it's a precaution.
Right. Well, so suppose, you know, I go on travel. I'm staying in a couple different hotels. I got my suitcase full of clothes. I come home. I have concerns. I wonder, you know, I don't want to be bringing bed bugs into my home. If I took all of the clothes and things that I was wearing and that were in my suitcase and I simply did a wash cycle, would that take care of the problem?
A wash cycle would be very helpful. The best cycle to put them through is through a dryer cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very sensitive to heat, and heat is actually one of the methods that's used to control them, even in apartment situation. So my inclination was to leave your clothes dry, unwashed, put them through a dryer cycle, even if they're dirty, and make sure the dryer doesn't automatically shut down to a cooler setting, But if they're in the dryer cycle for a full 30 minutes at the temperatures that dryers typically get up to, 140 degrees Fahrenheit, something like that, that will take care of them. That's the best. And of course, there's some things you can't put through a dryer. If those can be washed, that would be very helpful. Another thing that I have done is if I've known that I've been into a place that has bed bugs, I would leave my suitcases out in my car on a hot summer day for a few days. And temperature inside cars can get up to 140 degrees Fahrenheit, and bed bugs won't survive that, for at least not for multiple days reaching those temperatures.
Right, right. Wow. Okay, so there's a tip for what to do with our clothes, but let's say we're at home and we do find bed bugs in our bed. How do we get rid of them?
Well, there, my advice is to seek professional help at that point, because most of the do-it-yourself solutions come with risks for not using them correctly, or they come with poor end results. So personally, if I had a bed bug infestation in my own home, I would, even though I know a lot about bed bugs, I would still go with a professional. And it can be expensive, so I understand the inclination to try to do something oneself.
Right.
There are good products available to professionals that should not be available to the do-it-yourselfer, in terms of insecticides that have properties that the general consumer shouldn't be applying them if they're doing it on their own without following the strict label requirements on some of those materials. But the homeowner has very few options other than to make sure they're identifying that they have a problem and then seeking professional help to deal with it.
Wow.
That's what I would do. Now, if your income is restricted, maybe your landlord has the responsibility for seeking out those solutions. So that would still be my advice.
So it sounds like if I called in a professional and you said they have certain special insecticides and things, but that means they're going to be spraying this on my mattress, I'm guessing. Is that right?
They're going to be spraying, they're going to try to avoid the surfaces that you're actually sleeping on. But they may be spraying the mattress underneath the sheets that you use, around the cracks and crevices, around the beds. They're trying to target the areas where the bed bugs would be staying during the day, not necessarily where you're sleeping at night, on the surface you're sleeping at night. But they're using products that have a residual activity, that they products would stay in that environment for an extended period of time, so the bed bugs can be exposed every time they walk across that surface to get to the surfaces that people are sleeping on. So the target is to get a product that has good residual activity with some longevity in the environment, and of course safe to humans and pets that might be in the same place.
It just always kind of, I think everybody has a certain level of concern when they hear about insecticides or things around where they're sleeping or breathing things like that. So But your point is, it's not going to be realistic for me to go to the grocery store, buy a can of insect repellent, and just kind of spray around my bed or something.
Well, the insect repellents might work temporarily to keep them away from you, but they're not really good in terms of a long-term effect. And the best insect repellents, I don't think you want to have them on your skin or body for night after night, month after month, to deal with it until you because if it's not killing the insect, they're going to be around there waiting for that one night where you don't wear the repellent. Now, I'm not sure that the repellents are as effective as that would require in the first place. So
right.
Repellents, no. There are some desiccant dust products that are very effective in bed bugs and are used by professionals in a professional way. And they could be available to the homeowner. But then the concern is breathing the dust in and the potential problems that would come with that. If it's over-applied into the environment, there would be... I wouldn't want to have a pile of dust that's designed to dry out the bed bug coming into my lungs on a continued ongoing basis. So
right.
there's a concern with misapplication of all this.
Right.
Other do-it-yourself techniques I'm hesitant to mention because they can be very dangerous. Use of bleach on the bed or gunpowder in olden times and kerosene. It's really a nightmare potential scenario for the imagination of humans is kind of unlimited, and it may be self-limited if those practices are used.
Right, right. Yeah, no, it sounds like I'd rather have the bed bugs than those dangers. But we're actually out of time. And so, you know, Dr. Haynes, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to give us such an in-depth explanation, because this is a real situation. You know, people have bites, they wake up, they don't know what's going on, and it could very well be bed bugs. So thank you for taking the time to join us. Thank you for sharing all this. For those of you that are listening, if you want to go to www.sleepsciencetoday.com, you'll be able to get access to the show on our podcast networks. You'll be able to see it on YouTube, where you can actually see the show. You'll have access to other resources, and you can sign up for a free ebook and special offers that we give to our audience as well. So thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you on our next episode.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, sleep science today and sleep better tonight.